Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 291. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentra, your host here at Higher Human Performance, brought to you by Bula Network, LLC, serving CEOs, business owners, and executives. You can find out more by visiting the website, higherhumanperformance.com. It's episode 291. Today is about group power, clarity, feedback, and accountability, and we'll do it next. You're going to want to go see the show notes for today's episode, higherhumanperformance.com. Just plug in the number 291 in the search this website box and you'll see it. And what you're going to see is you're going to see a photograph of my first grade class. Yes, you will. It will definitely date me. It will let you know that I'm not a young pup, that's for sure. Boy, it's an extremely bright looking group of people. I mean, just look at us, man. We are all bright. We're young. We're shiny. Solid potential all the way around. If I counted correctly, 19 kids. I know classes are bigger today. 19 kids, one teacher. That's her in the back, Mrs. Arnold, and the principal. He appears to be wearing some bunny ears. He's not really. There's a bulletin board behind him, and there is a big bunny, and he just happens to be standing perfectly lined up so that you can see the bunny ears right over his head. Kind of funny. I don't remember his name. I was with this group of people on some, well, momentous days. I mean, come on, first grade. It's momentous for every first grader. But I was with this group on the day that President Kennedy was assassinated. Mrs. Arnold, she was our leader every day, including on that dreadful day, a day that we couldn't quite fully comprehend. I'd been a seasoned, even grizzled kindergarten veteran, but, you know, I was hardly prepared for the high-performing first grade class that I would enter. I mean, come on, kindergarten is not nearly as organized. It's not nearly as profitable. I mean, come on, we took naps. Naps, I tell you. Hardly a productive group experience, at least for me. And I can't tell you that I gained much clarity either in kindergarten. I do recall getting a little bit of feedback, though. And accountability, well, hey, we were kids, so. And kids in the 60s, in the 1960s, that was always in place. You know, because we grew up in an era where adults believed in teaching us discipline, you know, unlike today where kids rule. I think it was a better time, and I'm perfectly thankful to have been born in an era where kids were safe, but expectations were higher. I mean, come on, just look at us. Just look at this class of these 19 first graders. There is a kid. You can kind of forget that kid on the right. The kid on the front row on the right, yeah, he looks like he could enjoy a little bit of spiteful behavior. There's power in a group, though, and it certainly depends on the group. Today's show was sparked by a conversation that I had some weeks ago with somebody about a group that I am part of, where accountability is pretty high. No, check that. Accountability is real high. It's a group where leadership is not bashful to serve the group. And as we were talking, I found myself reciting all the reasons why the group worked, you know, why it performed at a fairly high level. And that really is what I want to share with you today. I want you to think about your own situations. I want you to think about your own opportunities with whatever groups you're a member of and whatever groups you may be looking to join or to form in the future. And these can be work-related. They can be personal-related. They can be anything. You know, I don't claim to hold any profound wisdom about this topic, but I do have extensive experience working with and forming high-performing groups. I know how powerful they can be. I know how powerful they are. And I know how addictive they can be for the members. And so with that, let's just dive in, shall we? I'm going to begin with the first question, and that is, why does the group exist? If there's no common purpose, the group won't be high performing. I mean, take my kindergarten classes. Pretty low performing groups, I would say, because, well, we were just there doing time. I mean, it was sort of like a fun kiddie prison. Yeah, okay, a half day prison with toys and snacks and naps. Every member of the group must know, must understand, and must believe in why they're together. I have posed it as a why question, but others would probably say it's purpose. Same difference. I mean, it quite simply is the reason for the group to exist. Why does the group exist? What are we here for? Take something as simple as co-ed recreational volleyball leagues. Players can be put together who never knew each other until their team was formed. The volleyball league is made up of teams of men and women who want to play volleyball, a co-ed recreational volleyball league. Now, let's suppose that this league has two different divisions. Let's suppose they have a rec division or a recreational division, and they also have a competitive division. The rec league is made up of people who just want to play according to the real rules of volleyball, but they're more interested in having fun, getting some exercise, being on a team. The competitive division, a little more serious. And the teams are more competitive, and each member, well, they have a higher skill than the people in the rec league. Now, that's important because the teams, the groups, they are comprised of mostly similar people desiring similar things. Have you ever been on a team where you wanted to really compete, but the other people were there and they were mostly there to just have fun? I mean, I see it. I see it in these adult leagues, whether it's softball, whether it's hockey, it can be any sport. And I've watched it, and it's kind of an interesting dynamic. You can see that there's some people who are there and, boy, they're intent and they're competitive. And other people, they don't care so much. They're just there to play the sport and have a good time. It's frustrating. I've coached many teams in my life, and there's always trouble when some don't want to take it as seriously as others, or when others want to take it too seriously when that's not the purpose of the team. So purpose is very important. And it's important that every member of the team understand why we're together and what we're here for. I'll include right here the necessity for high-performing groups to also be of similar ability and skill. Now, that likely deserves kind of its own heading for today's show, but I'm going to include it right here in the why does the group exist part, because you're just not likely going to ever be able to assemble or be part of a group where everybody is identical in skill, in ability, or experience. I mean, it's impractical. The key thing is to make sure that the disparity is small. That is, the A players, they want to play with A players. And even in a rec league, where we're not taking it all so seriously, that's still true. It's still true that A players at that level, they would like to play with other A players. Now, they'll be fine. They'll be perfectly okay if some of the players are B players. But now insert a C player or two, somebody who just does not even have the fundamental skills to compete at a B level, you're instantly going to make the A players annoyed. They're going to be frustrated. It's going to happen. It's just going to happen. So you don't want that to be the case. We need the C players to step up to become A or B players if they want to be part of that group, that higher performing group. Otherwise, I don't think they have a home. They just don't have a home. A few things destroy the effectiveness of a group more than a disparity of purpose. Now, this is not the same thing as some are here for one thing and others, they're here for different things. The recreational volleyball players know why they're on the same team. They don't want to have their nose broken by a spike. They want to play legitimate volleyball where lifts and net violations are called. So they want accountability, but they mostly want to compete in a less competitive, stress-filled league. Now, maybe one of them, they want to do it for the exercise. Maybe another, they want to do it in hopes of eventually moving up to the competitive league. So they want to just hone their skills. Maybe there's another one who's there mainly so he can play the sport with his wife. Now, each of those people may be getting something specific and different out of it, something that they want, something that they need, but they all know why they're together as a rec team. If just one member of our team is, a wannabe Olympian, then there's going to be trouble. We know there's going to be trouble. He'll be taking things far more seriously than the rest of us. Every lost point, he's going to rant. He's going to holler at teammates. He's out of context. He's out of context with the purpose of the group, and he's going to negate any joy the rest of the team might otherwise have. So it's important that players get placed on the team that best fits the purpose of the individuals. A, to play purely for recreational purpose, where winning is not nearly as important as just playing. B, to play as competitively as possible. Two completely different reasons for each group. So it's urgent that every roster is made up of players who know why they're together. Now, this is the fragility of team chemistry. It's where it starts. I've seen many personality conflicts erupt because team members don't share the same purpose. In every high-performing group that I've ever been a part of, everybody knew precisely why we were together and what our purpose was. And this includes buy-in, you know, that proverbial mental consent that joins people together to chase something in the same way. So, why does the group exist? Very, very important. And I started with that because I think that's where it does start. Secondly, how committed are we to do this? I mean, it's one thing to know why we're together, but that doesn't mean everybody brings the energy necessary to get it done. High-performing groups are committed to a man and a woman. Nobody is left behind on the commitment train. Everybody is on board. I mean, think of the times when you were part of a group that had high-performance potential, but something went wrong. Something went awry. Could have been any number of things that disrupted the performance of the group. I'll almost guarantee you that among any other problems the group may have faced, this one was most certainly right at the top. Not everybody was willing to put in the work, to make the sacrifices, to commit themselves to getting it done. Now, remember, we've already talked about A, B, and C players. And so at this point, we're assuming that the group is comprised of people who do belong together. But I need to inject something right here. A C player who is at that level due to inexperience or even a lack of talent, they can play nicely with the group if they're fully committed, if they're putting in the work, and if the group is seeing improvement and contribution. It's context. It's simple context. High-performing groups appreciate the hard work, even of the lesser experienced person who knows their place, and that's really important. They don't appreciate the C player who seems convinced that they're the star, that they're the A player. You've seen this soccer commercial with Donovan Landon, you know, the world-famous soccer player. He's it's an advertisement for some kind of online pay app or something, and the coach is handing out the jerseys, and he throws the jersey to Donovan and says, that'll be, $40, and he pays him with his phone, and he says, okay, your job is to get it to Joe. Joe's our best player. And here's Landon Donovan. He's doing crazy things with this soccer ball with his feet. He kicks the ball over to Joe, and Joe's colossally clueless about it. Joe's a C player compared to Donovan. He just doesn't know it. Yeah, we don't want that. If there's a C player who seems convinced that they're an A player, we have a problem. The team has a problem. The group has a problem. Now, likewise, the triple A player who won't work hard, that person that's got mad dog skills, mad dog experience, but they don't have work ethic. They feel entitled. They feel special. Yeah, that'll destroy the group too. No amount of talent is going to overcome the group's expectation that everybody has to bring value. And while every group can easily recognize the difference in each member, there is an equality that's expected. There just is. No, we're not all equal. We've all got different skills, different experience levels, but we can still be A, B, okay, maybe a C or two player here and there. But there are still some minimum standards that are established either by the leadership or by the group itself, and we've all got to meet that. We just all have to meet that. And when those standards, those minimum standards aren't met, what I call non-negotiable standards, that is standards that if they're broken, they can cause you to be ejected from the group. That's what a non-negotiable standard is. When those aren't met, commitment is appropriately questioned. And guess what happens then? Yeah, whatever peace existed, it gets disturbed very quickly. Nothing can replace commitment. Talent won't do it, experience won't do it, and a title won't do it either. So let's talk a little bit about motivation right here when we're talking about commitment. And let me define motivation as the energy that we all bring with us to do the work. Very different than inspiration. I may be able to inspire a person's motivation, but I can't give somebody energy that they don't have. You know, it's a little bit like a battery. The battery, it can have full energy. It can have a full charge. But if the connections are bad, nothing happens. The energy's there, but it needs direction. It needs connection. Inspiration might include some education to help a person connect or tap into their inner energy, but their battery level, their motivation, that's something that they've either got or they don't have it. Now, this is important. It's important because high-performing groups need everybody to consistently show up with the energy to do the work. You've seen this. You've seen it destroy groups. Somebody always is suffering some kind of an issue. You know, this is the person that we look at them and we say, you know, there's always something going on with them. Maybe they're always running late. They're always tardy. They're always filled with an excuse. Or maybe they're sick. They're sick all the time. They've got drama. There's just constant drama in their life that they seem to be intent on sharing with the group. It's like they're the only ones who've got any kind of drama or issues in their life. You know, yeah, we've got those people in our lives. And groups have those kind of people too. Everybody thinks they could bring higher value, that person who's always got stuff going on. But sooner than later, the group is going to learn to not rely on that person because that person lacks consistency. Consistency. Everybody in the group questions their commitment, and rightfully so. Rightfully so, because they don't seem to have the commitment that's necessary. I mean, who cares what potential good they might bring to the group? Potential doesn't matter. Potential doesn't accomplish anything. The group is going to grow increasingly disgusted with those kinds of people. And we see it in the workplace all the time. Every single member of the group has to bring the energy and the determination to contribute. So question number three is, how selfish are we? High-performing groups won't tolerate selfishness. And peace, I have found, is disturbed by this one awful trait far more often than any other single thing, selfishness. The group, that's what matters. And members know that they can only get what they need and what they want through the group. Let's go back to our volleyball team. The person who wants to exercise weekly with his wife, they're getting something specific and something different than the person who wants to be on that same team in that same group because they want to improve their play so eventually they can play at the more competitive level. But they're not there yet. And yet neither of these can get what they want outside the context of the team. They both need the team in order to get what they want, even though they want very different things. Now, suppose they put their desire before the team. How's that going to work? It's not going to work. It's going to wreck the team, and it's going to wreck their chance to have the team serve them to fulfill the very thing that they most want. It's going to rob them of the opportunity to not only get what they want, but it's going to rob them of the opportunity to serve the team. Everybody's going to lose because they've just gotten selfish. Happens all the time. Team members can't get their attention off themselves. You know, they're desperate. They're desperate to want what they want, and they don't care about anybody else. And so they behave as though the group is there to serve them and as though they have no responsibility to serve other people. It's the single most destructive behavior of any group, high performing or otherwise. I've never ever seen a group perform at a high level consistently where there was no peace. Now, I'm not talking about respectful conflict. I'm not talking about vigorous debate. I think those can be very profitable if members, if they'll behave appropriately, if they'll behave with some respect, if they'll behave with the intent of making the work better. But it'll be very destructive if it's self-centered, if it's full of ego, if it lacks respect for the overall performance of the group and respect for people. It's born of that, I'm going to look good even if you guys look bad, kind of a philosophy. And you've seen that. You've seen that in the workplace. High-performing groups can't and won't tolerate it. Great groups, the very best groups, they check their ego at the door and they refuse to let their own or anybody else's ego interfere with the overriding reason for why they are together. Now, sometimes it means sacrifice, right? It means we submit to the group's decision and the well-being. It means that idea that we might think is best, maybe that needs to be tabled because the group, they're desiring something else in the moment. There's a time to speak and a time to sit quietly. And our level of selfishness, and I would add to it, our level of foolishness, often determines which is appropriate. Is it time to speak? Is it time to just kind of sit back? We need to be able to read the group and understand that. Well, that requires a high degree of selflessness instead of selfishness. Now, another part of this is our ability and our willingness to serve other people in the group. The less selfish we are, the more likely we are to gain. And that seems like a contradiction, but it's true. Let's go back to our volleyball team. Suppose you're on a volleyball team. There's 9 people on this team. Now, in volleyball, there are 6 people on the court at any one time. So that means if everybody's there, 3 people are sitting on the sideline. The selfish player on the sideline can think, well, I ought to be out there. I'm better than him. I'm better than her. And if he continues to think that way, here's what's going to happen. He's going to start acting that out. He's going to start behaving the way that he's thinking. But he could decide instead. He could decide, I'm going to cheer and I'm going to encourage and I'm going to stay upbeat and I'm going to be ready when it's my turn to go into the game. And I'm going to be the very best I can be when I do go out there. That's a huge difference in behavior sparked by how players think. Okay, now let's flip it, and now you're one of the 6 that are on the court, and you're seeing this on the sideline. You're seeing one or both of those behaviors. How are you going to behave toward those 2 different approaches of the player on the sideline? I mean, if you're on the court, do you really want to surrender your spot to that pouting, I'm better than you kind of a teammate? No, I guarantee you don't. Okay, now you look next to that guy, and here's this high-energy, cheering, encouraging teammate who's excited for those of us that are on the court. Do you want to see that guy or gal get some playing time? Now, remember, they're fully capable of playing at our level because that's why we're on the same team. Yeah, of course. Of course. We're happy. We're happy to surrender our spot to let that person have their chance to play. I mean, we'll gladly share our time with a guy like that because, well, they're serving us. They're helping us. They're part of us. You know, it's more than attitude. It's behavior. It's what we do. It's how we conduct our lives. 4th, how proud are we? Without exception, every high-performing group that I've been a part of or the ones that I have watched from the outside, they have a pride in the group that is without question. I mean, they are filled with pride to be part of this group. They're proud of the accomplishments of this group. They're proud of the growth and the opportunity that this group affords. There's something exclusive, and that's a really important word, I think, because we all love exclusivity. There's something exclusive about high-performing groups. It's special. It's even addictive. You know, it's manifested in my experience in how much time people spend together. I've run organizations where people would, they would stand in the parking lot for long periods of time after work, talking, brainstorming, telling stories. I've coached teams who did the same thing after a long practice. I mean, there's a reluctance to part. There's an attraction to stay together. It's a bond that I have learned many, many people have not ever experienced. And that's sad to me. It's sad to me because these are special times when we're part of something that brings us that kind of pride, that kind of determination to remain a part of it. Pride can fuel greater commitment, greater discipline to make sure that we're earning our keep, that, that we're contributing. It's not an arrogant, I'm better than you kind of a pride. It's a feeling of gratitude to be able to contribute to such a group and to be part of it. And guess what? We want to maintain our place in it. We want to make sure we're still included in this exclusive group. We don't want to be cast out. Okay, well, let's end with this. What about clarity, feedback, and accountability? Because those are the terms that I put in the title of today's show. Well, I think by now you can see how clarity happens. High-performing groups are quite clear about their why or their purpose. That's what drives their ability to be clear about how to get things done. And feedback, well, feedback is valued and it's encouraged because without it, well, you got no clarity. We need feedback so we can get clarity. And without it, frankly, there can't be any improvement. And we're together in order to improve. And where there is no accountability, well, you can just forget high performance. It's not possible. Expectations have got to be established and they have to be met. And when they're not met, what's the repercussion? Yeah, what's the repercussion? There isn't one? Well, then the group isn't going to be high performing. It's got nothing to do with whether a member is an A player or a B player. I mean, the stars on the team, they need higher accountability because they can probably contribute more. Every member, I don't care if you're A, B, or C, every member has got to be expected and required to bring everything they can to benefit the group. If the group tolerates your willingness to bring anything less, then why should I put forth my best? You want to destroy the morale of your very best people? Then don't do anything with the very worst people. Just leave them alone. Don't ever make them be accountable. And in time, and it won't take long, you will rob your A players of their morale because they'll see, you know, what's the point? I mean, there's no accountability to those people lower down on the performance chain. Why am I doing what I'm doing? Accountability is not a dirty word. It's vital. And I'll tell you this, it's craved. It's craved by high-performing people. The best people, they want high accountability. Guess who doesn't want high accountability? That's right, the slugs. The sloths in your organization, they don't want accountability. They resist it. As I was talking about a specific high-performing group with this friend, which prompted today's show, all of these components were part of the discussion, but accountability was a real focal point of our conversation, mostly because it's so rare. Now, people talk about it. But I think very few people really do it. And very few people really experience it. And I'm not talking about calling people on the carpet. I'm talking about real, legitimate, positive accountability. I'm talking about maintaining a high expectation. Now, we've all experienced getting in trouble. And that's not what I'm talking about, although it could include that when it's deserved. No, mostly I'm talking about it's manifested in not letting people off the hook for a less than you can do kind of a job. We just don't let people off the hook when we realize that they gave it half-hearted effort. It's not expecting the B player to perform at an A level. No, that's not it. It's expecting the best that we know the B player can deliver. It's accepting nothing less for the good of that person and for the performance of the group. So I think it's a service thing. It's not a punitive thing. Now, that doesn't mean that it can involve some punitive measures if they're required, because it can. But that's not the purpose. No, the purpose of accountability is to elicit the very best of each member so together the group can soar as high as possible. It's a teamwork thing. Simply put, it's a teamwork thing. If your end of the boat sinks, So does mine. That's what accountability is. And each group member deserves to be held accountable. Otherwise, guess what? They become unfit for the group. How's that fair? Everybody deserves to perform at their highest level. I mean, if we allow otherwise, then we just lose confidence in each other. We lower our expectation for each other, and we're willing to put our group at risk. And again, I ask the question, how is that fair? It's not fair. So let's end with a myth. Well, let's end with myth busting. Some people think that high-performing groups just happen, or they don't. You know, they think it's a serendipity thing that can't be created, can't be controlled. I think that's wrong. I've heard people, including sports team coaches, talk about team chemistry as being this ephemeral, fragile, hard to predict kind of a thing. As like it's just lucky, you know, it just sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. And boy, you just hope it happens. It doesn't have to be that way. I don't think it should be that way. I don't think it should be left to chance. I don't think it should be left to happenstance. And yet still I hear leaders who just seem to be living in a world of hoping that they can capture it. And they approach it like they're searching for a four-leaf clover. I mean, the odds aren't great, but, you know, hey, it could happen. I don't think those kinds of leaders are prepared to lead a high-performing group. They're not strategic. They're not intentional enough to deserve to lead such a group. And a high-performing group, I think, deserves better leadership than that. The world's full of examples. Full of examples of leaders or coaches that they're just not able to assemble a winning team. I'm thinking, of course, I'm here in Dallas, so it's easy for me to say. I'm thinking of Chip Kelly. Now, the Cowboys have got their problems for sure, but Chip Kelly up in Philadelphia, I mean, has been a colossal failure. Even though he's been empowered, evidently, to pretty much have things the way he wants them. And I'm not qualified to second-guess NFL professionals, but it's pretty easy for anybody, even a rube like me, to see that what Coach Kelly is doing and has done, it ain't working. I mean, the fact is, it's not working spectacularly. And on the flip side, we look at the Carolina Panthers of the NFL. I mean, last season was a pretty lackluster affair. This year, they're leading the league. Watch them play. I mean, I watched them just completely annihilate Dallas. Of course, who can't annihilate Dallas this year? You see that you can see, you can just see they've got something special going on. And I don't know, but I'm willing to give credit to their leadership for helping make that high-performing group come together. I'm pretty willing to give credit to their leadership group for assembling a group of players and for educating and bringing together a group of players who have, for lack of a better phrase, bought in to whatever it is they're pitching. And it shows. I mean, it shows in the performance. If you're a leader, I'm going to tell you, put in the work. Put in the work to assemble the best group possible. Be devoted to making sure that these ingredients are in place. Don't shortcut it. Don't accept mediocre. Don't accept excuses. Just make it happen. People are craving such groups. They want to be part of it. They don't want to let it down. They don't want to be ejected from it. I mean, it's why in too many cases the rich get richer and the poor get poorer when it comes to organizations. You see it all the time. Top performing people who aren't yet part of such a group long to be part of such a group. They'll line up. They'll line up to be part of your group if you're a high-performing group. Case in point, speaking of football, the top college football programs continue to be the top college football programs year in and year out. Why is that? In part, it's because the best high school football athletes, they want to be part of a winning program. And so the Alabamas of the world continue to recruit the very best players because they win. They win. Recruiting is easier when you're leading a high-performing group. When you're leading a group that's winning, it's also a whole lot more fun. And there it is, episode 291, Group Power, Clarity, Feedback, Accountability. I hope you'll visit the website, higherhumanperformance.com is it. Brought to you by my company, Bula Network, LLC, serving CEOs, business owners, and executives. You can check Check out all that you want. More about that over at the website, higherhumanperformance.com. I appreciate you listening. I got no call to action. You believe that? I'm just thankful that you were here. I'm thankful that you listened. Okay, I'll give you a call to action. Share the podcast with a friend. Tell other people about it. If there's anything I can do to be of service to you, go to the website, hit that contact page, or frankly, you can probably hit just about any page and find a way to reach me. I'd love to hear from you. My name is Randy Cantrell, coming to you from Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas, inside the Yellow Studio. Thanks.